Now, the House Rules Committee is meeting today to finalize the two articles of impeachment against President Trump and set up a vote on impeachment in the full House scheduled for tomorrow. Democrats and Republicans went back and forth on the fairness of the process so far and whether the president's actions constitute impeachable conduct. Tomorrow will be just the third time in American history that the House would vote on whether to impeach a president. Eric Giordano is an associate professor of political science for the UW Colleges and founding director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service based in Wausau. Eric, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, I think people in the public don't generally lose a lot of sleep thinking about what the House Rules Committee does, but they are in the limelight today, aren't they?
They are, but you're right. They shouldn't lose any sleep over this. This is really just, additional political theater in preparation for the vote on the articles of impeachment, which will begin tomorrow, the debate and vote. However, there is one really important thing that the House Rules Committee has to do, and that is they have to determine the rule for the debate on the floor of the House begins tomorrow, as well as the procedures for voting and other things like whether or not to allow amendments and when and how and who can speak. So there are some important things that the committee has to do, but to this moment, it has not done any of that. It's been more sort of a theater around who's right, around the fairness of the process, as well as the actual substance of the articles themselves.
Right. This is not a step that's going to stop or make the impeachment process succeed. It's just setting the ground rules for who can say what when, basically leading up to the vote. Is that right?
That's correct. And I don't want to dismiss that or diminish it, because that is significant, right? I mean,
right.
This is political theater in the extreme, and both sides need to come out of this looking as if they have won. And how do they do this, right? The Democrats need to come across looking as solemn, as dignified, as fair, and as independent. And of course, the Republicans want to cast aspersions on the fairness of the process and make it seem as if this is a complete partisan witch hunt. So there is a lot at stake here, and the rules will matter in terms of how well the Democrats can control the argument and the debate.
Now, before we get into how they made those arguments a little more and what happens next, there is maybe, I imagine, a teachable moment here, civics in action. This is the kind of thing that might happen on any kind of bill, no matter how mundane, this kind of rule setting in a legislative body.
Exactly. In fact, the rules that are going to be set here are very similar in a way to the as rules are set for any debate on any piece of legislation. And actually, this is a little different, because in the last impeachment hearing for President Clinton, they actually didn't have to set the rules through the Rules Committee. There was a special resolution that came immediately out of the Judiciary Committee. And it was agreed to by unanimous consent. And so those rules were negotiated even before the Rules Committee got a hold of it. This time is different, because there is complete partisanship around this. The Judiciary Committee, the Republicans certainly don't have any interest in signing on to anything really that the Democrats want to propose. So, this will be a full-fledged debate in every sense.
Talking to Eric Giordano, political scientist at UW Colleges, founding director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, looking at the latest in the impeachment process today, the House Rules Committee setting up the rules for how a debate would proceed leading up to a vote. I want to give a listen to Democrat Jamie Raskin sitting in today for Judiciary Chair Gerald Nadler defending the process that Democrats have undertaken so far.
I've seen lots of fairness in this process. I've seen in the closed door depositions. I saw the Democratic counsel get an hour. I saw the Republican counsel get an hour. I saw the Democratic members get to question. I saw the Republican members get to question. I have seen this committee bend over backwards to get all of the depositions out as quickly as possible, while the President of the United States is stopping at least seven witnesses from coming forward.
And meanwhile, Republicans say there hasn't been enough due process, enough on the president's side here. They say some of their witnesses haven't come before committees either. What do you make of this part of the argument?
Well, this is really probably for me the most fascinating part of the Rules Committee hearing that we're listening to today. Both sides really have a point. The Republicans are arguing that the process was not fair. And to be fair to them, the Judiciary Committee did not allow what is normally called for in one of their House rules for a day of minority testimony. So in other words, the Republicans in the House were shut out from allowing, being allowed to choose witnesses that they could call that would testify for those hearings. In fact, they ultimately only got one witness that was any at all reasonably favorable to them. That was one of the constitutional scholars that testified. And so they are kind of claiming by rule that they should have had this day or at least a negotiation with the chairman about this. And it turns out that in the Rules Committee, one thing we're hearing today is that they're right, that the Rules Committee are actually saying, you know, you're right, that wasn't followed exactly correctly, and we do need to give you that day of testimony. And the Republicans are saying, that's great, all well and good, but it's going to happen after the articles of impeachment are voted on, and that isn't fair. So they do have a point here. On the other hand, one thing that Republicans aren't saying or not emphasizing anyway is that the president did have an opportunity to appear before the committee or to send people representing him before the committee, and they have completely stonewalled that Judiciary Committee. And so, you know, both sides have really something to say about this.
We also heard from Judiciary Committee Ranking Member Doug Collins, Republican, testifying in the hearing. Here's a listen to him talk about a problem he's had with the process.
This is all about a clock and a calendar. It has been for a while. Since January, when we were sworn in, it's about a clock and a calendar. Why do I say that? Because we had to get to it by the end of the year, because if we went into the next year, it would be really too close, especially from the House's perspective, to the elections that they're trying to interfere with. And yes, they're trying to interfere with elections, the 2020 election.
What do you make of that argument, Eric? Because you could make a case that Democrats would want this to drag on well into 2020 if they're hoping to interfere with elections. What do you make of that argument from Ranking Member Collins?
Well, you know, there's been some surprising agreement in this Rules Committee hearing today around the issue of the pressures that the Democrats have faced around trying to get these articles of impeachment before, you know, a true House vote. And, you know, and that's been acknowledged by the Democratic leaders of the Judiciary Committee. And that maybe that sounds surprising to everybody, but, you know, there is some pressure. There has been some pressure, you know, to get this done. Now, why? Well, they want to make sure that it happens in a timely way. And also they feel, at least this is what has been argued, that this matter is an ongoing matter. In other words, the president, they believe, the Democrats, was trying to influence the outcome of the 2020 election by trying to get President Zelensky from Ukraine to basically do an investigation of Biden, which would essentially affect the Biden campaign and perhaps the election itself. So they feel like getting this resolved earlier is important to allowing a fair election. At least that is what they're saying in their rhetoric. One could also argue that they know that by getting this done now, they also will push off until the new year a Senate trial. And of course, that is in the middle of primary season. So the beginning of primary season. So this really will have an impact on the campaign one way or the other.
Now, speaking of things still going on, the president's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, has been back to Ukraine in the last week or so, and he's speaking in the media talking about how he had helped oust the ambassador to Ukraine. And some people critical of the president are saying, wait, we're accusing the president of doing this stuff, and the stuff is still going on while we're doing this impeachment process.
Yeah, this is really remarkable, Rob. I don't even know what to make of this, and I'm just happening to speak personally. It seems as if Rudy Giuliani is the president's worst advocate, and yet they seem to have this incredibly symbiotic relationship where they both appreciate what each other are doing, and the president seemed to appreciate the fact that Giuliani is going out there and still trying to, you know, dig up dirt in a way against the Democrats. And it really, though, he's adding fuel to the fire. And I have to believe that the Republicans behind the scenes are just wishing that Rudy Giuliani would go away or just be quiet for a little while. But apparently that's not going to happen.
And some Democrats outside of Congress are critical of the impeachment process for moving quickly, with Giuliani maybe adding more fuel to the fire. And then his associates, Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman, under arrest. Lev Parnas apparently willing to talk about his relationship with Giuliani and other Republicans. Some Democrats saying, slow it down. We've got more information that may come out here.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, some are waiting for this other shoe to drop. I mean, this revelation that one of these Ukrainian hatchet guys had received money from the Russians. I mean, it's a pretty scurrilous sounding sort of set of events, and they think there could be something out there. Of course, they're also waiting for, you know, the big shoe to drop, which is someday perhaps getting the Donald Trump's tax returns. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there, and I think it was interesting to hear Representative Collins today testifying before the Judiciary Committee. He's a Republican, and of course, he was the ranking member of the Judiciary, and he was saying, look, you know, the reports are already out there that the Democrats are, you know, ready for impeachment round two. So they could actually, you know, instigate another set of articles of impeachment down the road. And so some Democrats have said, look, we should slow it down and really put it all together into one package. Of course, the whole election thing is getting in the way, and the timing and the appearances of whether this is a partisan witch hunt or if this is a solemn duty of the Congress. These are all threads that are sort of influencing this decision and the timing of it.
We're talking to Eric Giordano, Associate Professor of Political Science for the UW Colleges, looking at where things stand ahead of a vote on impeachment in the U.S. House tomorrow. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see the House approve these articles of impeachment against the president? Do you want to see that happen tomorrow or soon? Do you think the inquiry process was a fair one? What do you think the next last few months say about our country politically? What do you want to see happen in the Senate? What questions do you have for our guest about the process? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Eric Giordano, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW Colleges, looking at the latest in the impeachment process. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want the House to vote to impeach President Trump tomorrow or shortly thereafter? If they do, what do you want to happen in the Senate? Are you hoping that the Senate would remove the president from office if impeachment comes their way? What do you want to hear that you haven't heard so far when it comes to witnesses and testimony? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Ken is with us in Libertyville, Illinois. Ken, hello.
Yeah, hi. Sorry to do a bit of a callback, but I had a question for your guest. Saying that the Republicans, you know, didn't have a chance to call any witnesses during the inquiry, I thought that both Morrison and Volcker were both on the Republican witness list, and maybe the Democrats were also interested in calling them, but I could have sworn that those two guys were somebody that the Republicans wanted to interview. And then super briefly, I know there's this other Republican talking point that the president has claimed executive privilege and that it needs to wind its way through the courts before Democrats can charge anything like obstruction of Congress. And the question is, I thought that during the Nixon impeachment, there was extremely expedited, Supreme Court decision that says, no, you can't claim privilege on these documents or witnesses. And I was wondering why that kind of expedited determination can't be made this time around.
Ken, thanks for the call. To that first point, I think I could split that hair. You were talking, Eric, about the House Judiciary Committee not having those kind of witnesses. The witnesses Ken was talking about were before the House Intelligence Committee in that earlier stage. But to Ken's second point, why couldn't we have had a quick judicial process to get those witnesses and documents that Democrats were looking for that the White House didn't want to come before Congress?
Right. Well, I suppose we could, right? I mean, that's completely in the hands of the Supreme Court, and there is a way to have that expedited, but that's really up to the court. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, everyone is really anxious to see how the court is going to respond, both, you know, to these sorts of executive privileges concerns, the tax issues of you know, whether the president's tax return should be allowed. I mean, there are a lot of very important decisions that are facing the Supreme Court around separation of powers. I mean, things that could literally be groundbreaking or at least clarifying to our constitutional norms. And it would seem in the case of an impeachment, perhaps, and trial, that perhaps that could be expedited. But you know, it doesn't seem like the court is going to do that. And frankly, that's maybe one of the criticisms from multiple angles of why this process shouldn't be rushed, that perhaps, you know, that there should be time given for the court to rule on these sorts of things. But here, going back to something that was said, talked about earlier, why now? Why are they pushing for this? Well, you know, Nancy Pelosi, this might shock some people to hear this, is somewhat conservative relative to her colleagues who have been pushing for impeachment for quite some time. You know, she didn't want to do this. I think it's because she understands that there could be some ramifications for the election, both for the presidential election, for the midterm elections coming, congressional elections coming up. And, you know, she would like to get this wrapped up in time so that it will have perhaps less effect, because she doesn't know. I mean, there's some, you know, suggestions out there that proceeding with impeachment could actually hurt the Democrats' chances. And so there's a lot of issues going here. But to your caller's point, it's really up to the court to decide.
So we're getting another caller now. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hi. Jeff, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead.
I wanted to say that one of the things that concerns me, we elected a Republican congressman up here, and Congressman Duffy resigned, and it saddens a lot of us up here that we don't have a Republican voting no on this impeachment or being a vocal supporter of Trump, because Trump also won Wisconsin. So it's just something that we think about up here in northern Wisconsin.
Jeff, thanks for the call. You had empty seat after Sean Duffy resigned. It won't affect the outcome probably, though, Eric.
Yeah, it won't. And I understand. I mean, I'm a resident of that district as well. And it's tough, you know, when you don't feel like you're being represented. And of course, when you feel that a, you know, the former representative would have, you know, supported your viewpoint. Yeah, I think a lot of people wish that maybe he had, you know, extended that term out until the reelection. But, you know, it's hard to question, you know, he had some personal reasons and for resigning. And so, you know, but you're right, Rob. I mean, it's not going to affect the vote. It's not going to, in the long term, affect this process at all.
But the House of Representatives is there to represent. And yeah, you and Jeff are currently, I guess, unrepresented in Congress, it sounds like.
Right.
Jeff,
basically, yes.
Thanks a lot for the call. We're talking to Eric Giordano from UW Colleges, founding director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. We're talking about the latest in the impeachment process. Back to your calls now. Travis is with us in Waukesha. Travis, hi.
Yeah, hi. So when I was at work a lot, I was able to actually listen to a lot of the hearings, or at least some of the hearings, and I just felt like, and I mean, I fit kind of in the middle in the political scale, and in the side of things, it just seemed like there was a lot of personal opinions that were being shared rather than just like facts about, you know, what had happened. It was a lot of, you know, I think that he did this wrong. In my opinion, this is wrong. And it wasn't like, you know, there was a solid, you know, he did blank and this is why it's illegal. And could your guest kind of share a little more about how that could be impeachable, and I guess in this case?
Travis, thanks for the call. And this is at the heart of the arguments between Democrats and Republicans on both committees, all three committees now, Eric.
Yeah, I mean, your caller makes a great point. I mean, and if you're a Republican and you're listening to their arguments, it is essentially that point. It's, you know, whether he did something that might be unseemly or, you know, something different and we haven't seen, and whether you like his style or you don't. You know, is there a crime? Did he commit a crime? And in the articles of impeachment, there is actually no mention of a specific crime. And although there is mention of bribery and corruption, you know, in the Schiff report and so forth, that's kind of the basis for the Republicans' argument. Now, the Democrats say that that's not necessarily the only thing that rises to the level of impeachable offense. For example, it's not just a crime, they say, but it's a pattern of abusive behavior. And because impeachment is a political process inherently, there doesn't actually have to be a named crime. But, you know, they have said that they're accusing him of soliciting the interference of a foreign government in the 2020 election. That benefits the Trump election and damages the prospects of his political opponent. They have said that his purposes and intent have been corrupt. And I think your caller is right that there is definitely some speculation. And look, all you have to do is look at the transcript that everybody's talking about, this, you know, the famous Zelensky phone call transcript, where the Democrats and everybody who supports that view are saying it's so clear that he is, you know, trying to create coercion or of a quid pro quo to get something in return for the withholding of the funds or the release of those funds. And then, of course, if you listen to the Republicans, it's exactly the opposite. It's, you know, we don't hear any crime there. We don't hear anything specific. And it really just comes down to an interpretation. And that's part of the dilemma is they sort of are both so extreme in forcing us to take a side on this.
Eric, very briefly, as we wrap up, when we look back on this, however it comes out in a couple of years, do you see the partisan divide easing up or maybe growing through after this process?
Oh, gosh, Rob, you know, I take some students to Washington, D.C. every year. And one of the phrases that we always tell them is, you know, remain skeptical, not cynical. But I will tell you, it is so hard today not to be cynical and not to wonder, you know, how this is going to impact us going forward. I just don't see a let up in this partisan divide. And I mean, you just look at the American public and how we're feeling about this impeachment process. I mean, it's amazing how evenly divided we are roughly on this, especially, you know, it's like 86% of Democrats feel that, you know, that President Trump should be impeached or removed from office, and 87% of Republicans feel exactly the opposite. I mean, we really are in a divided society, and I think it's going to continue.
Eric, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Eric Giordano from UW Colleges, founding director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, looking at the latest in impeachment.